Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. So how's the primary day voting going in your state? You may not be having one until sometime in March. As a matter of fact, who are we talking about today? The primary is March 4th. Who is that, Kathy? Ohio and Texas, it's March 4th. Anyway, if you live in one of the states where the primary voting was conducted today and you want to comment on it at some point tonight, give us a call. Here in Georgia, Obama won the Democratic primary. Hillary Clinton came in second. I'm not going to run them down for you because you've probably been watching a lot of this if you're interested on the cable programs, either CNN or MSNBC. So, not a whole lot to report tonight. Things are turning out pretty much as they expected. The only thing I found amusing was Huckabee's, quote, win, unquote, in West Virginia. Huckabee was coming in dead last. I mean, like way, way down in the bushes. And the McCain crowd was a little bit worried about Romney. McCain and Romney were like neck and neck. So when the McCain crowd decided it was time to pull a little political stunt, they told their delegates to switch over. I think after the first vote in the caucus to switch over. I think Ron Paul's people did this too, switch over and vote for Huckabee. So Huckabee's big win in West Virginia, I looked at the returns. Huckabee had like 51% of the vote. Romney had 47%. McCain had 1%. And Ron Paul wasn't even on the chart. I thought, well, no, this is insane. And then I heard the explanation. So sure enough, Kathy and I were talking about earlier today, sure enough, Huckabee is strutting around like a little banty rooster about, wow, we won West Virginia. Hey, diphthong, no, you didn't. It's called politics. You may not know how that works. And Romney, of course, he's whining and bitching, complaining about what happened in West Virginia, and somebody ought to go up to him and say, Mittens, this is how it works out here. You know, you're a rich white boy. You better get used to how this game is played. I just find the whole thing kind of interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I read something from a listener named Sandra who identified herself as a hippie girl of the 70s and why she was supporting Hillary Clinton. And I read her email, and some of you supported what she wrote, some of you did not. But I got this today, kind of interesting. She writes, "Dear Mike, I'm amazed at how many, quote, progressives, end quote, are falling yet again for the right-wing tactics to hold on to the White House. If Obama is the, quote, chosen, end quote, one, if he's the chosen one, then I will hold all progressive talk show hosts who have been buying into the Obama myth responsible. I will then let you all go. Who needs you all, as you are just a part of the problem if you cannot recognize a wolf in sheep's clothing when it's right in front of you? Barack doesn't even know he's being manipulated by the neocons and right wing, it seems. Mike, just how deep do you dig for the truth? I am beginning to wonder, as you have spouted your hatred for Hillary, you are buying right into Karl Rove's hand. In fact, your hatred of Hillary and the Clintons collectively is worse than Rush L. If you don't think something is fishy when 40% of the people voting for Obama are Republicans, then you are not paying attention and living in a bubble of your own hatred for the Clintons. Of course, you will and can continue to hate Hillary, but you have done a real injustice to the Democratic Party. True Democrats are voting for Hillary. Your attempt to discredit her has already done its damage, and I'm sure you will continue to bash her and people like myself. I have stopped listening to you and Randy Rhodes this past 2 weeks because of your, quote, opinions, end quote, based on a popularity contest. Yes, give any college student a few beers and then watch them rally for Barack like a college football game. Do you really put your trust in today's youth? I live in a college town, Gainesville, Florida. I have been to anti-war rallies right across from the university and gotten the finger at us from these so-called youthful voters who are only concerned about their student loads and if abortion is legal or not. They haven't got a clue to the complexity of the world situation. Do you remember madras, clothing that fades when washed. It was a fad. That is what Barack is, a fad. When the dust settles and Oprah goes back to her own TV stage, these same students will go back to beer drinking and fast driving and lots of whatever they do, and we, the people of real conscience and the intellect to think for ourselves, will be the ones to suffer another 4 years of war, pain, and financial ruin along with the rest of the world under Republican President John McCain. Signed, a very unhappy and saddened Democrat, Sandra. Well, okay, I didn't realize I was buying into a myth. As far as how deep do I dig for the truth, I put in what I consider to be a considerable amount of effort, unless, you know, Molly needs me to take her bike riding or tell her a story, and then I have to stop and my truth digging. As far as my hatred for Hillary, no, I don't hate Hillary. I think she is a Republican. This is where you and I just terribly differ, Sandra. Well, you and I and you and a lot of people. Hillary Clinton is backed by every single industry that backed Bush. The banking industry, the finance industry, the energy industry, whether it's oil or coal. She is a favorite of the military-industrial complex. If anyone needs to take a look at what they're doing, Sandra, perhaps you should do that. I don't hate Hillary Clinton at all. I think she makes a fine senator from New York. She's a warmonger. She votes in favor of war. She wants more death and more destruction. She has pretty much voted with Bush on just about every critical issue that's come along. So, Sandra, before you level this kind of criticism against me or anybody, Randy Rhodes, me, your next-door neighbor, whoever it is that you're pissed off at because we are not supporting Hillary, maybe you ought to take it out of the emotional range and just take a look at her voting record.
I would also ask Sandra if she's sent the same letter to Ted Kennedy or John Kerry or Oprah or any of the myriad other, you know, prominent voices in this country who have spoken out in favor of Barack Obama. I think she ought to maybe write Ted Kennedy and ask Ted Kennedy why he so desperately wants a Republican president in the next term. Or John Kerry, why John Kerry is secretly supporting the Republicans. Or Caroline Kennedy or Maria Shriver. You know, let's find out what is wrong with these women and these men and these political minds. Ted Kennedy, who, you know, has lost two brothers to presidential races in politics and who spent a lifetime of service in the Senate. Let's find out why he is so desperate to see McCain as president. I'd like to know that, too.
Okay.
Next.
There's a reason why in polite company, which talk radio is not, you don't discuss religion, sex, or politics. It's because of stuff like that. I don't know, Sandra from Adams House, she made a very eloquent plea for support for her candidate, Hillary Clinton, and why she was supporting Hillary Clinton. And I read her letter on the air. That's why I thought I would read the second one. The first one was all emotion and all about, all the things that she perceived this former Goldwater girl to have done for feminism and minority rights and human rights. And again, I would just suggest you take a look at the record.
Yeah, and I would think that most Barack Obama supporters do not want to be considered shills for the Republican Party.
I would think not. I voted for Barack Obama today, and if there's one thing I am not, it's a shill for the Republican Party. Also, I'm not stupid. I may be naive, maybe a little naive, but I'm not stupid.
You know, the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow, I didn't have no pharaoh, not even no place to go. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. She said, Lord, have mercy on my wicked son.
Get your rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. As far as the contest between Hillary and Barack, Stephen Zunes, writing at Foreign Policy in Focus, was published yesterday, makes some really good points about the clear policy differences between these two candidates, and especially the differences between the two candidates in whom they are putting around them, who they're putting around them as their advisors. And this is key, and I just wish that people who are supporting Hillary Clinton would take this into consideration. I'm not saying change your vote, but take it into consideration. There's some definite differences to be taken into account when you consider Clinton and Barack Obama. Let's stipulate that the kind of people the next president appoints to top positions, or any president, positions in national defense and intelligence and foreign affairs is extremely critical. Just take a look at the Bush crime family if you doubt that. As Stephen Zunes writes, such officials usually emerge from among a presidential candidate's team of foreign policy advisors. In the case of the Bush crime family, you got Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Richard Perle, all of whom participated in the hideous, horrendous lies to invade and occupy Iraq by, to some degree, convincing this brain-dead president that Saddam Hussein was an imminent threat and that American forces would be treated as liberators. You know, I believe that Bush is the dumbest ass ever to sit in the White House. I swear he is. So, you know, I can cut Bush a pass for his ignorance, not for his intransigence or his stupidity, but certainly for his ignorance. But what about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton? You've got to take a look at who they picked to help them deal with the occupation of Iraq and all these foreign policy decisions that they're going to have handed to them as a result of this miserable son of a bitch who's been there for the past 7 years. And as Stephen Zunes points out, Clinton's foreign policy advisors tend to be veterans of Bill Clinton's administration, most notably former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and former National Security Advisor Sandy Berger. Now, both of those people are just absolute bloodthirsty warmongers. Madeleine Albright couldn't care less about the deaths of thousands of children in order to make a point to the rest of the world that the United States won't be pissed on, especially where it concerned Iraq. Madeleine Albright, to me, she would have fit in perfectly as a guard at a death camp in Germany or Poland in the 40s. I swear to God, this woman is absolutely bloodless. Her most influential advisor, Hillary's, and her likely choice for Secretary of State is Richard Holbrooke. Now, he served in a number of key roles in Bill Clinton's administration. He was ambassador to the UN. And a member of the Clinton's cabinet. He was special emissary to the Balkans. He was assistant secretary of state for European and Canadian affairs and U.S. ambassador to Germany. Now, Holbrooke also served as Jimmy Carter's assistant secretary of state for East Asia. One of Holbrooke's jobs was to prop up the Marcos dictatorship in the Philippines, which guaranteed the deaths of God only knows how many thousands of Filipinos who tried to get rid of that miserable right-wing bastard. Holbrooke supported the Indonesian President Suharto's murderous policies in East Timor. Suharto, this filthy pig that just died before he could be brought to justice. And also, Holbrooke backed the generals in what was referred to as the Gwangju Massacre in South Korea, people who wanted to break free of the right-wing government in South Korea and were shot down, just absolutely murdered. So these are the kind of people that Hillary Clinton has advising her. Barack Obama's foreign policy advisors, on average, tend to be younger than those of Hillary's. They include mainstream strategic analysts who have worked with previous Democratic administrations, such as former National Security Advisors Zbigniew Brzezinski and Anthony Lake, and former Assistant Secretary of State Susan Rice, former Navy Secretary Richard Danzig. Barack Obama's advisors also have included some of the more enlightened and creative members of the Democratic Party establishment, like Joseph Cirincione, whom we've had on this program, Lawrence Korb of the Center for American Progress. Lawrence Korb was an assistant secretary of defense in the Reagan years and then turned on the Reagan administration once he realized what these crazy bastards were doing. Advising Barack Obama, his former counterterrorism expert Richard Clark. Now, Obama's team also includes human rights scholar and international law advocate Samantha Power, and other liberal academics. Some of Barack Obama's advisors have particularly poor records on human rights and international law, such as retired General Merrill McPeak, who also was a backer of Indonesia's occupation of East Timor. And also on the Barack team is Dennis Ross, who is an ardent supporter. He's another American Zionist. He's an absolute supporter of Israel's occupation and of the West Bank and the continuing treating the Palestinian people in this apartheid manner that the Likud government is doing. So while Barack Obama has a couple of questionable advisors, every single one on the Hillary team is a right-wing warmonger. And this is why I don't understand why people like Sandra, when they write me their letters, they don't do their research first. We'll have more on this when we come back after the break. This is Nova M Radio.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
I'm a walking down the street like Lucky LaRue. Got my hand in my pocket.
It's about 25 before the hour. The other thing to keep in mind for Hillary Clinton supporters, too, there's so much in her record. Back in September of 2006, what is that, about a year and a half ago, there was a an amendment to, I think, one of the war funding bills of George Bush's. An amendment was added to that bill. Pat Leahy and Dianne Feinstein added an amendment that would have banned the use of cluster bombs in densely populated areas. And the amendment would have prohibited us from selling cluster bombs to countries who wouldn't abide by those restrictions. In the first place, you got to wonder about the moral imperatives of a country that sells cluster bombs. That would be us. But anyway, Hillary Clinton voted against the amendment. In other words, the woman who wrote the book It Takes a Village is willing to have a village bombed with cluster bombs. Jesus Christ, has no one explained to Hillary Clinton what the little bomblets do? Now, I think one of the reasons she voted against it was because of pressure that she certainly is willing to go along with from AIPAC, from the American Israel Political Action Committee. The Israeli military uses cluster bombs. They're very effective in shredding human flesh. The problem is they don't all completely explode. And as a result, in so many countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, the occupied territories, probably Israel, there are in countries in Africa, there are so many of these bomblets laying around, and children pick them up and have their arms blown off or their eyes blown out. And it raises the question, is there no limit to the level of violence and killing that Hillary Clinton is willing to tolerate and support? I mean, son of a bitch, come on, you all. You want to write me emails about Hillary Clinton that you get all moist and dewy-eyed because she's a woman and that's why you're going to vote? I don't give a goddamn how long you've been waiting for a female candidate. You're going to vote for a Nazi? What is wrong with you? And by you, I mean anyone who considers voting for someone. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Check the record. Check what these candidates have supported, what they've voted for, what they've lobbied for, what they've said they want to see enacted as law, and what they have voted against. And don't anybody tell me, don't send me an email saying that this was just a tactic on Hillary Clinton's part, that she had a grander scheme. Anyone who votes to allow cluster bombs to be dropped in densely populated areas, which was specifically what the amendment was about, is a killer, is a disrespecter of human life. I would no more vote for that person than open up my own jugular vein. So if you want to vote for Hillary Clinton, have at it. Go ahead. But don't write emails to this program telling me that I'm a traitor to the Democrats because I won't support this murderous person. Don't do that, because all it does is display your gross ignorance of your candidate and what she's about. Now, back to the differences between Barack and Hillary. Stephen Zunes, writing at Foreign Policy in Focus, writes, while some of Obama's key advisors like Larry Korb, who we just mentioned, have expressed concern at the enormous waste from excess military spending, Clinton's advisors have been supporters of increasing the military budget.
Oh, but she's a woman. I want to see a woman president.
Obama advisor Susan Rice and Samantha Power have stressed the importance of U.S. multilateral engagement. Kind of goes back to what Obama said about sitting down and talking with our supposed adversaries, bringing in our supposed allies to solve problems. Madeleine Albright allies herself with the jingoism of the Bush administration, taking the attitude that, and this is a quote from her, if we have to use force, it is because we are America. We are the indispensable nation. We stand tall, and we see further into the future, end quote. Son of a bitch, what do you people want? That's Madeleine Albright, the woman who said the deaths of 500,000 children in Iraq was an acceptable price for the Iraqis to pay. You want Hillary Clinton? Tell you what, do. Go down to your nearest slaughterhouse, buy a great big old barrel of blood, and jump into it, wallow around in the blood, then get out and go to your polling place and vote for Hillary. Go ahead. Susan Rice, who is a Barack Obama advisor, has emphasized how globalization, NAFTA and all this other crap, has led to uneven development. And that has contributed in its turn to destabilization and extremism. And Susan Rice stresses the importance of bottom-up anti-poverty programs. You don't say to the corporations, go, do anything you want. Exploit the hell out of the labor. We don't care. No tariffs, no nothing. Go for it. No, that's not what you do, unless you want the kind of result that we've got now, thanks to George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and the dumbass that's in the White House now. If you really want to end poverty, using globalization as a means of doing it, you do the bottom-up anti-poverty programs, the microloans, the getting the World Trade Organization the World Bank, the hell out of the negotiations. Sandy Berger and Madeleine Albright have been outspoken supporters of globalization and the current top-down so-called neoliberal programs. Neoliberal meaning you go to a country that's in debt and you say, okay, you got to get out of debt. So here's what you do. Cut your poverty programs. Cut your medical programs. Cut your education programs. Cut any programs that even smell faintly like socialized programs, like farm subsidies and so on and so forth. Pay off your debt. Open up your industries to international industry to come in here and develop the industries. And what do the international capitalists do when they come in? Well, of course, you know what they do. The first thing they do is come in and drive wages into the toilet. They hire terrorist squads like Coca-Cola did in Colombia to execute people who want to organize unions. This is what Hillary Clinton and Sandy Berger and Madeleine Albright are about. Now, I've kind of held back a little bit on Hillary and just said, well, you know, I don't like her policies. But I'm really getting tired of getting these ignorant emails from people and seeing this ignorant garbage out here on the internet about Hillary Clinton. Either you take a look at your candidate and who is supporting her and who's going to advise her and who her foreign policy team is and who her domestic policy team is and who she's going to put probably in cabinet positions and then make your decision, or shut the hell up and let the adults handle the discussion about who's going to be the next president. And the same applies, frankly, for Barack Obama. All these white liberals and black folk who are stumbling around America right now go, oh, I want Barack Obama because he's black. Yeah, I think Michelle Obama said, if that's your game, take it somewhere else. Barack Obama has some policies. He's got some advisors, and I know his voting record isn't perfect. Jesus Christ, are we going to ignore the good because we can't get the perfect? That makes sense, doesn't it? So anyway, for all these middle-aged women for whom I have nothing but respect for, who have been, you know, I understand that women didn't get the vote in this country till 1920, for God's sake. But for women, American women in their 50s and 60s who've just been, you know, kind of hanging in the shadows, waiting for the time that there'd be a female for president, running for president. Shirley Chisholm, she was a woman. When was that? 72? 68? 76? I don't know. It was a long time ago. Geraldine Ferraro, she ran for vice president. As far as Hillary Clinton is concerned, for God's sake, if you're going to support her, go right ahead. But don't criticize me, unless it's on substantive grounds, for saying the things I do. Because what I try to do with Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or Abe Snake, I don't care who it is, look at their record. And if there's anything Hillary Clinton says, and she says this in her campaign, 35 years experience, okay, take a look at it. And especially take a look at who her senior policy advisors are now and compare them to Barack Obama. I don't care if Barack Obama is polka-dotted. I don't care if Hillary Clinton is striped. Look at the people who are going to be advising them and what they're about. Jesus. Sandy Berger and Madeleine Albright. My God, why not just bring on Henry Kissinger? Bring him aboard. Time for another break. All right, we have more of this. Stick around. Huh? Have I got you all pissed off? I know there are a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters out there. And I'm getting to the point where I'm beginning to believe that you folks are just totally myopic. Or that you think because Hillary and Bill went through what they went through for 8 years, that Hillary Clinton would be best equipped to survive a right-wing onslaught in the general election. You can't be serious. That's why you would vote for another Republican? Hillary Clinton? Shoving at the girls who try to look pretty. And if you treat on time, you can get to work by nine. And lock your sleeve and drop to get your pay. If you ever get annoyed, you can be self-employed. I see you got your fist out. Say a piece and get out. Yes, I get the gist of it.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Ten before the hour. Back to this difference between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And again, you know, I don't tell anyone how to vote. I don't claim to have all the answers. But I do have access to their voting records and the people around them who are advising them, as you do. I don't have any information you can't get. I don't have any knowledge about these candidates you can't have. So, you know, I don't present myself on this program as some lard-ass shill like Rush Limbaugh who's screaming that John McCain is not a liberal and anyone who votes for him is a freak. I'm saying if you want to vote for Hillary, vote for her. But for God's sake, vote for her because you believe in her policies. Don't vote for her because she's a woman. Don't vote for Barack Obama because he's a black man. Don't vote for John McCain because he's a white man or a veteran. Look at their policies. And if that's what you want, then go for it. Jesus. But what I'm doing tonight, at least in this segment, and probably a little into the next segment, is pointing out some specific policy differences between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. If you don't like what you're hearing, turn your goddamn radio off. That's very simple, isn't it? If you can't handle the truth of these two candidates, then get out of town. Wow. And my source is Stephen Zunes, writing Foreign Policy in Focus. Obama advisors like Joseph Cirincione have emphasized a policy toward Iraq based on containment and engagement, and have downplayed the supposed threat from Iran. Clinton advisor Holbrooke, meantime, who if you don't understand the extent to which Richard Holbrooke is a warmonger, that's your fault. That's your fault, because the information is there. Holbrooke, meanwhile, the Clinton advisor, insists that, quote, the Iranians are an enormous threat to the United States. The country is the most pressing problem nation, end quote. And he's also said he believes Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is like Hitler. Jesus Christ! Hitler? He's a tin-horn Islamist jackass who has a figurehead position in Iran, and Richard Holbrooke calls him like Hitler. That's what George Herbert Walker Bush said about Saddam Hussein. And this is a Hillary Clinton advisor. Come on, people. Now, perhaps the most important difference between these two foreign policy teams, Barack Obama's, Hillary Clinton's, concerns Iraq. Obama's advisors and supporters have emphasized that Barack Obama had the better judgment in opposing the invasion beforehand. In fact, in the critical months prior to the launch of the war in 2003, Obama openly challenged the Bush administration's exaggerated claims of an Iraqi threat, and almost presciently warned that a war would lead to an increase in Islamic extremism, terrorism, regional instability, as well as a decline in America's standing in the world. Now, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. I was on the street with people demonstrating it's this war who were saying the same thing. The fact that Barack Obama said it is a clear indication that he, like a lot of us on the street, understood what this psychopathic bastard Bush was about to initiate. Clinton? Where was Clinton? Hillary Clinton was repeating the fact of the administration's false claims of an imminent Iraqi threat. She voted to authorize Bush to invade Iraq at the time and circumstance of his choosing. And Hillary Clinton confidently, like the rest of these war-loving, AIPAC-supported right-wing freaks, predicted success. We're concerned Iraq. Oh yeah, we're going to march in. We're going to give all the girls nylons and all the boys chocolate, and they'll put flowers in our guns, and everything will be fine. Jesus God. Now Hillary Clinton has used every language device known to your eighth grade English teacher to weasel out of her vote. Well. She voted to authorize a punk, a warmonger, a right-wing nutcase like George Bush to use force against Iraq when and where he chose. That's a responsible vote on the part of a U.S. senator? Oh, for God's sake, stop. And despite all this, Hillary Clinton has refused to apologize for her war authorization vote. Should she apologize? I don't know. I don't. She has not. Now, it's also significant that Senator Clinton's foreign policy advisors, many of whom are veterans of her husband's administration, were virtually all strong supporters of George Bush's call for the invasion and occupation of Iraq. And by contrast, almost everyone of Senator Obama's foreign policy team was opposed to U.S. invasion. Does that matter to you? All you Hillary supporters that are just whining and crying and wringing your hands and beating your breasts and rending your garments about this occupation we have going on and a million dead in Iraq and 3,000 American service personnel dead and God only knows how many wounded. Are you aware
that Hillary Clinton and her team supports this. And if you're not, why not? So don't send me an email that whines about, well, I've waited for 40 years to see a woman be president. Are you out of your minds? During the lead-up to this occupation, Obama's advisors were suspicious of the Bush administration's claims that Iraq somehow threatened U.S. national security to the extent that it required an invasion and occupation of that country. A quick example, Zbigniew Brzezinski, national security advisor in the Carter administration, argued that public support for war, quote, should not be generated by fear-mongering or demagoguing the idea. By contrast, Clinton's top advisor, and probably her pick for Secretary of State, Richard Holbrooke, insisted that Iraq remained, quote, a clear and present danger at all times. Don't send me these dumbass emails. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour, we are following through here on an article from yesterday by Stephen Zunes on the difference between Obama and Clinton, the forces behind Obama and Clinton, and what both of them, especially their advisors, what these advisors have been involved in. And it is on that basis that I'm sure Stephen Zunes, and I know I, would hope that people would make their decision regarding Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, if that's what your choices are. But this blind following Hillary Clinton, which I simply have not been able to understand from the get-go, but especially now, where it is absolutely clear that this country, the United States of America, has got to shift policy. We must, if we're going to survive. Now, you can make an argument that we shouldn't survive, that we have screwed things up so badly that we should wind up like, oh, I don't know, France or the UK, former global powers who now are well served to control chaos inside their own borders. You can make that argument. And it's probably a good one. If, however, you believe the United States still has something to offer the planet in terms of leadership, in terms of policies, then you better step aside from Hillary Clinton. That's all, because, you know, Hillary Clinton's talking about change. What she's talking about is gender change in the White House. She's not talking about changing policies, for Christ's sake. Come on. All the people around her are involved in the same old that we have witnessed since 1978, 79. So Stephen Zunes has done the work for me and for you, and is showing, based on their records, the policy difference between these two candidates, and based on their backers, who's behind them, what are the agendas. Going back again to Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was a foreign policy advisor. That man must be 90 years old, foreign policy advisor to Jimmy Carter. And now is one of the senior foreign policy advisors to Barack Obama. Is Brzezinski an old cold warrior? Yeah. 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 He was. Have his policies changed? Yes. Yes. Have Madeleine Albright, was she an old a cold warrior? Yes. Has her policies have her policies changed? Hell no. But again, you pay your money and you take your choice. You know, you live with your choice. That's all. Brzezinski warned that the international community would view our invasion of Iraq, a country that was no threat to the United States, as an illegitimate act of aggression. Duh. Noting that it would also threaten America's leadership, Brzezinski said that, quote, without a respected and legitimate law enforcer, global security could be in serious jeopardy, end quote. If the United States had the reputation, if not the fact, of being the enforcer of international law, which at one time, to some degree, we were. We also were the biggest, second or first biggest violator of the law. It was either us or the Soviet Union, go figure. But the United States, going all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt, speak softly, carry a big stick. If somebody was going to be the global enforcer of international law, who had the power other than the United States? Well, I can't think of anyone. But that has been thrown on the trash heap. Thrown on the trash heap. Holbrooke, on the other hand, Brzezinski, Zbigniew Brzezinski, still believes that a respected and legitimate law enforcer would lose his reputation if it invaded a country that couldn't defend itself for no apparent reason like we did in Iraq. Holbrooke, Hillary's advisor, rejects the broad international legal consensus against offensive wars. He rejects that. Hillary Clinton's probable Secretary of State does not believe there's anything wrong with an offensive war. A war launched for no reason other than what? National resources? To remove somebody from office? He insisted, Holbrooke insisted, that it was perfectly legitimate for the United States to invade Iraq. And that the European governments and all the anti-war demonstrators in this country and around the globe who objected encouraged Saddam Hussein. Sandy Holbrooke, Richard Holbrooke, in other words, came up with the tired garbage that John Ashcroft and the rest of these pigs did. If you're not for us, you're for the enemy. Holbrooke had the audacity to say that people who were against the war were supporting Saddam Hussein, encouraging Saddam Hussein. Now, this is the guy who would probably be Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State. Is that what you want? Okay, that's your call. Another key Obama advisor, and we mentioned before, Joseph Cirincione, who is an expert on international weapons, weaponry, and how the spread of weapons, including nuclear weapons, is just absolutely destroying everything. He's with the Carnegie Endowment. He argued that the goal of containing the potential threat from Iraq, if there was one, had been achieved. I mean, after 12 years of the most impossible sanctions that resulted in the utter destruction of the middle class in Iraq, the utter destruction of the professional class, and the fact that Saddam Hussein had been turned into an impotent sack of garbage who amused himself by building castles, it was up to his people to overthrow him and put him on trial and execute him if that's what they wanted to do. But Cirincione said that Saddam Hussein is effectively incarcerated and under watch by a force that could respond immediately and devastatingly to any aggression. This was back prior to the invasion. He went on to say, inside Iraq, the inspection teams preclude any significant advance in weapons of mass destruction capabilities. The status quo is safe for the American people, end quote. That was back before this rat bastard Bush and his neocon advisors launched the invasion and occupation of Iraq. The people now advising Barack Obama were advising against the war for the obvious reason. There was no threat. Ever. Now, by contrast, Hillary Clinton's advisor, Sandy Berger, who served as her husband's national security advisor, insisted that, quote, even a contained Saddam was harmful to stability and to positive change in the region. And therefore, the United States had to engage in regime change in order to fight terror, avert regional conflict, promote peace, and protect the security of our friends and allies, end quote. Has any of that been accomplished, or have just the opposite effects been brought into play by the invasion and occupation of Iraq? And these are the people supporting, backing, and advising Hillary Clinton. Are you out of your minds? Those of you who say, well, you know, I really like Hillary. It's time for a woman to be president. Jesus God. Why not have the bitch of Buchenwald be president? I mean, if you're going to pick a woman, why would you pick Hillary Clinton to be a Democrat? I mean, if you're a Republican, Hillary Clinton fits the bill perfectly. And the Republican movers and shakers and money people and the Republican establishment in this country, not the religious nutcases, but the real Republicans, corporate America, they understand that. That's why they're backing Hillary. Other top advisors to Clinton, besides Sandy Berger, such as her husband's former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, confidently predicted that American military power would easily suppress any opposition to a U.S. takeover of Iraq. And as Stephen Zunes writes, such confidence in the ability of the United States to impose its will through force is reflected to this day in the strong support for President Bush's troop surge among the Clinton advisors. And as Stephen writes, as Zunes writes, perhaps that was one reason that during the recent State of the Union address, when Bush proclaimed that the Iraqi surge was working, Clinton stood and cheered while Obama remained seated and silent. Oh, my God. Now, not everybody on Hillary's team is a hawk. There are some centrist opponents to the war, including retired General Wesley Clark, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson. But on balance, well, let me do this when I come back. I'm almost finished with this, and then we'll take some calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Past the hour, finishing up this comparison between the teams that are ready to start governing when either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama becomes a president of the United States, if one of those two do become president of the United States. Stephen Zunes writing Foreign Policy in Focus. And we've spent the entire show so far on this. Summing up, Zunes writes, on balance, it appears likely that a Hillary Clinton administration like Bush's would be more likely to embrace exaggerated and alarmist reports regarding potential national security threats, that a Clinton administration would ignore international law and the advice of allies, and a Hillary Clinton administration would launch offensive wars. By contrast, a Barack Obama administration would be more prone to examine the actual evidence of potential threats before reacting. An Obama administration would work more closely with America's allies to maintain peace and security, and would respect the country's international legal obligations, ours, and would use military force only as a last result. A last resort. And then Zunes sums up by saying, progressive Democrats do have reason to be disappointed with some of Obama's foreign policy agenda. At the same time, as The Nation magazine noted, members of Obama's foreign policy team are, quote, more likely to stress soft power issues like human rights, global development, and the dangers of failed states, end quote. And as a result, the nation said, quote, Obama may be more open to challenging old Washington assumptions and creating new approaches, end quote. And as Zunes closes, new approaches are definitely needed. Now, this is typical of some of the emails I'm getting. This is from, I don't know, CC. The subject line says, so long. And it says, commenting in paternalistic terms, what the hell does that mean, and mocking people by speaking in falsetto, you just lost a listener. Argue with Senator Clinton's politics all you want. What the hell was I doing? But don't mock my wish to have a leader that looks like me for a change. You see? Try going without one that looks like you for 200 years and then get back to us. Now, that's a good reason to vote for Hillary. That is the dumbest-assed email I think that I have gotten probably, certainly all of this year, maybe all of 2007. You're going to vote for Hillary Clinton because she looks like you? Ah, my God. Okay, well, go ahead. I mean, you're defining your own stupidity.
And I just have to say for the record that if any of went out there and seen a picture of Mike Malloy, he really doesn't look like Barack. you might look a little bit more like
Hillary.
Like Hillary, yeah, actually. Right.
And this is from TP, who writes, Hillary has another ace in the hole, the so-called superdelegates who can vote any way they want to. I'll be very interested, the email says, to see how they vote. What the hell is a superdelegate anyway? Just another way of the Democratic Party saying that our vote, us common folk, really doesn't matter. And yes, you are right. Look at what they do, not what they say. Anyone who makes any type of decision based on these debates doesn't deserve to vote. But the fact that the ignorant are in the vast majority, there's really no reason for the educated to vote. Our educated votes just get washed away. I wouldn't vote for Hillary if W himself suspended the Constitution and ran for a third term. Well, okay. And the other thing, too, I would just guarantee you something. I don't make political predictions because it's a fool's game, but I'll just make an exception tonight. There was tremendous turnout in Florida and Michigan, and because for the Democratic primary. And because Florida and Michigan decided not to play by the rules imposed by the Democratic National Committee, they were informed that all those delegates chosen would not count. Now, I think in both states, didn't Hillary win in both states? Didn't she win Michigan and Florida? Watch what happens. And this is where I'm going to be very concerned if this happens with the current leadership of the Democratic Party. What's his name? Howard Dean. If we get to the convention, Democratic convention, and Hillary Clinton does not have enough votes, and the number needed would include the delegates that the ghost delegates from Michigan and Florida, I will be willing to bet you something, a cup of coffee, that Howard Dean and the Democratic National Committee will suspend the rules just this one time and allow those delegates that went to Hillary go to Hillary, even though it was the DNC that imposed the dumbass rule to begin with. You watch. Watch and see what happens. The Democratic Party at this time is just absolutely desperate to get control of the government of this country. The problem is the Democratic Party is not, for the most part, the Democratic Party. The leadership of the Democratic Party. Well, you've heard it all before. I'm, you know, why beat a dead horse, right? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
On the Nova M Radio Network, by the way. A couple emails here about that hour-long dissertation from Stephen Zunes. Oh, by the way, you know, I don't have any illusions about Barack Obama either. When he has screwed up, in my opinion, only my opinion, he screwed up. He supported the bombing of Lebanon, the Israeli bombing of Lebanon, which I think was just a gross mistake in the Israel-Lebanon war of last year. Just like Stephen Zunes said, there are several areas in which, or several policy decisions, not many, that Obama has made as a United States senator that are certainly open to serious and severe criticism. There is no question about that. But Hillary, if you look at who is advising the Obama team, or who the Obama team is, who the Hillary Clinton team is, that's where you should pay attention. That's all. Gordon in Oklahoma, in the subject line, threats to the region. That was one of the rationales that Richard Holbrooke used in supporting Hillary's advisor, in supporting the Bush policies where it concerned Iraq. It was a threat to the region. Gordon writes, as I recall, there was not a single country in, quote, the region, end quote, that considered Iraq a threat. And Gordon is absolutely right. Who considered Iraq a threat when the Bush bastard invaded with the support of Democrats like Hillary Clinton? Who considered him a threat? Well, let's see. Who are his neighbors? Syria? Did they consider Iraq a threat? I don't think so. Turkey? No, they're too occupied with the Kurds. Who else is over there? Saudi Arabia? Please. Kuwait? Uh-huh. I don't think so. Iran? No. So who then? Those are Iraq's neighbors. Did I leave one out? Is there one up there between Iran and Turkey? What's right up in there? I don't have a map in front of me. But one of the justifications was that Iraq was a threat to its neighbors. This psychopathic twit in the White House still uses that line, and Hillary Clinton still applauds it. Who in the region consider Israel? Please. Israel would flick Iraq like you or I would flick a roach off the dining room table at Thanksgiving. It's absolutely ridiculous to think that Iraq, after 12 years of sanctions and a murderous ass-kicking by the first Bush, and then 12 years of sanctions by the Clinton administration, all 8 years, and then 3 years of the Bush II administration, that Iraq was able to do anything but roll over on its back, kick its legs, and wait to be squashed. God, Iraq. Barry writes in, I just realized why I voted for Obama. I voted for Obama because my Hebrew name is Ben Zion Baruch, and I look a little like Saddam Hussein. Okay. Bob, in Massachusetts, I don't understand why the supposed, I don't understand the supposed Democratic loyalty to the Clintons. The Democratic Party suffered its biggest and most disastrous defeats while Bill Clinton was in power, and yet the conventional wisdom is that the Democratic Party regulars are fiercely loyal to the Clintons. I don't get it. Is this just one more inexplicable death wish attitude on the part of the Democratic Party? Perhaps the Democratic Party does indeed deserve to die. Greg in Des Moines writes, the well, Greg, I can't. The blank warmonger Hillary Clinton also supported Bush calling Iran's the Republican Guards, a terrorist organization. Greg in Des Moines, yeah, you know, when that occurred, that would be like the president of France declaring that the United States Marine Corps is a terrorist organization. So you have some half-witted moron like Bush making that kind of a claim. And then you have senators like Hillary Clinton jumping in and saying, yeah, that's right. It's insane. Let's do some phone calls. All right? Want to do some phone calls? Sure, let's do some phone calls. Starting with Mike, who's calling from Northern California. Mike, welcome to the program. Hey,
hello?
Mike. Yeah, you're on. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Excellent. Do you remember me? I interviewed you a couple months ago for a newspaper article.
Yeah, I do. Where's the article?
I meant to send it to you in the mail. It should be on its way.
Why don't you email me a copy?
I'll do that. I tried to invite you and Kathy up to a Wolfpack basketball game, but I know you're not interested.
You got that right.
But you're on a roll tonight, sir. But yeah, what I wanted to say is you're exactly right. We don't need to look at the figureheads, you know, who are running. We need to look at the advisors and the people they're surrounding themselves with.
Well, sure.
Who are going to be in the cabinet?
That's right.
Who's going to be making the decisions. But one other thing, the other night you rep the Democracy for America grassroots All-Star campaign.
Yes.
I worked for Democracy for America over the summer.
Uh-huh.
And currently I work for one of the three finalists, a guy by the name of Roy Carter. And you were pitching up Nancy Skinner, and I love Nancy. She's a great woman.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to give some props to my boy Roy Carter. He's a lifelong school teacher and football coach who retired and you know, he's poor, he has no money, he decided to run just because he was tired of seeing the students being mm-hmm. sent off to Iraq and then come home and then be sent off again against yeah. their will. It's a really good story, so I encourage people to check him out and check out his website and go vote on DFA and vote for whoever you want to. It's a great organization.
What's his name again?
Roy Carter.
Roy Carter. And go to democracyforamerica.com
uh-huh.
and he'll be there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And, If you have a second, I want to touch on something you talked about last night.
Sure.
Last year, back in a couple years ago, back in 2006, I worked for a local AM station, a radio station,
mm-hmm.
and I was a radio host, and not as good as you, sir, but all right. And I was doing a special program on 9/11.
Yeah.
And I was giving airtime to Bob Bowman and to Kevin Barrett. I was going to give airtime to, you know, all the different viewpoints and
right.
all the vantage points about it. And, you know, it turned out great. The editing was perfect. It was a wonderful program. And our radio station manager heard it, hated it. He fired me just because we were giving airtime to the so-called conspiracy theorists. So they fired me and never sent me my last paycheck. But that's the type of stuff we have to deal with up here in North Carolina. I'm sure you know about that.
Oh, is that where you're calling from?
Yeah.
I said Northern California. My bad. I meant North Carolina. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised, Mike, at all. Especially, I'm sure it was a small station,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also
actually in fact when they decided not to run it, they aired a rerun of the Neil Bort show.
Adding insult to injury for sure. All right, Mike, thanks for checking in.
I'll say one more thing. If Mike Huckabee keeps winning states, we're going to be having the revelation real soon.
Well, I hope he keeps winning. I hope Mike Huckabee gets the Republican nomination.
Oh, it would be easy to beat.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Have a good night.
All right. You too. The speaking of Neil Bortz, first of all, Kurt wrote in about the neighbors to Saddam didn't consider him a threat. Kurt writes, not only did none of his neighbors consider him a threat, but the Kurds in the north and the Shia in the south didn't even consider him a threat anymore. Yeah, regarding Bortz, though, you know, I used to work with Bortz. I've been to his house a long time ago. I know him. I got to know his wife a bit. Used to work at the same radio station, the one he's still at. He'll be there until they carry him out feet first. I used to think Bortz was kind of an eccentric, kind of a right-winger, Republican, libertarian, conservative libertarian. I've changed my mind. He's a goddamn maniac. He's a psychopath. He's an absolute, and I don't understand it. Neil Bortz is not as rich as Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh by any means, but he makes millions of dollars a year. He's got all the money that anybody in this godforsaken crap hole of a state, Georgia, could possibly want. So on the January 30th edition of his nationally syndicated radio show, He was talking about former Senator John Edwards, who was then going to have an announcement that he was withdrawing from the 2008 presidential race. And Bort said the following. This is at MediaMatters.org. Bort said the following. He said, I like this. Edwards' campaign will end the way it began 13 months ago with the candidate pitching in to rebuild lives in a city still ravaged by Hurricane Katrina. Edwards embraced New Orleans as a glaring symbol of what he described as a Washington that didn't hear the cries of the downtrodden, end quote. Then Bortz goes on like this. Cries of the downtrodden, my left butt cheek. That wasn't the cries of the downtrodden. Those were the cries of the useless, the worthless. New Orleans was a welfare city, a city of parasites, a city of people who could not and had no desire to fend for themselves. You have a hurricane descending on them, and they sit on their fat asses and wait for somebody else to come rescue them. Somebody else's job to get me out of here. Somebody else's job to save a life. Not mine. Send me a bus. Send me a limo. Send me a boat. Send me a helicopter. Send me a taxi. Send me something. But you certainly don't expect me to actually work to get myself out of this situation, do you? Haven't you been watching me for generations? I've never done anything to prove my own lot in life. I've never done anything to rescue myself. Why do you expect me to do that now, just because the levee broke? After he finished that mockery, Bortz went on. And then Edwards said, yeah, I was. It was Washington's problem. It was all Washington's problem. It was all George Bush's fault. You had a city of parasites and leeches. And that's George Bush's fault? So, boy, I need to slow down. I'm saying too many of the things I actually believe today. End quote. The guy has no humanity whatsoever. None. He is the worst example of a rich white person. The worst example. No charity in his heart. Nothing. Just a cold, calculating son of a bitch. He hates black people. He hates people who have talent, whether it's musicians or street performers or actors, jugglers. He hates anybody with any kind of talent. Just such a scummy man. I am so ashamed that I worked at the same radio station with this pig twice. Media Matters goes on to say Bortz has previously made disparaging remarks about Katrina victims. For instance, on June 6, 2006, Bortz told his listeners, quote, I love talking about these Katrina refugees. I mean, so many of them have turned out to be complete bums, just debris. Debris that Hurricane Katrina washed across the country. I mean, what is that? What kind of a human being says that about other people who have just had their lives utterly and absolutely destroyed while this miserable, lard-ass white man with all of his money sits back on his lardy ass and makes statements like that? Bortz, you're disgusting. I hate breathing the same air with you, pal. It's about 8 minutes before the hour. Now, regarding just a useless human being, useless to everybody except himself, like Neil Bortz. Like I said, I've known Bortz for 35 years. He and all Republican, all right wingers, think about it. They always, always attack the poor, the people who just don't have the ability to defend themselves. They set up these straw men and attack them. They mock and attack poor people, people who have no power whatsoever. They attack women. They attack children, like the children's health care programs. What is it about Republicans, these conservatives, that the more money they have, the bitchier and more vile they become against people who can't defend themselves? What is that? What kind of filth What kind of poverty of the human soul is that? Wouldn't one think, you know, going back to, who is it, Kathy Maslow's hierarchy of needs? You've got what? What are the food, clothing, shelter, sex, and then you move on. If there's anything,
it starts with survival needs, and then
survival needs, and then it spreads out to the defining characteristics of a human. After those immediate needs, survival needs are met. I swear to God, I cannot think of a single right-wing Republican, especially in this filthy talk radio, right-wing talk radio business, who has gotten beyond those essential perceived needs for survival. No matter how much they get, they want more. Never any room in their hearts or souls for compassion or empathy or charity or sympathy or understanding or what else? What else, Kathy? You know, what are some of the more or less base human drives and functions? None of these filthy Republicans. Show me one that this little piglet Sean Hannity has, or this raving maniac Michael Wiener Savage, or Bortz, or any of these right wingers. Any of them, especially the ones in media. They never get beyond those basic, essential, primary needs of their own. They just keep expanding the horizons of, I need more money, I need more shelter, I need more food, I need to get larger, I need a larger house, I need to cheat on my wife more, I need more sex, and she won't give it to me, so I need more, supersize me, make me bigger, make me bigger, make me bigger, make me bigger. Till they become like, where do you think Jabba the Hutt came from? And that's Bortz. He spends the better part of his program attacking people who were devastated by a flood, for Christ's sake. But that is so typically Republican. It is so typically Huckabee supporter. It is so typically right-wing Republican. Neil Bortz, Rush Limbaugh. They're sickening. They're just, these are not, and they spread this filth coast to coast, border to border, on how many radio stations, day in and day out. And for some radio stations, it's not enough to play these sons of bitches during their live program. They have to rebroadcast them at night. On and on and on this filth. And it never stops. Is there no room in the broadcast band except for a few of us? Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Jeff Farias, Peter Werby, Sam Cedar, Rachel Maddow, me. Is there no room except for this little handful? Bob over at Head On Radio. I mean, is there no room in all these radio stations, in all this broadcast time, to broadcast anything except this right-wing, self-referential, gimme, gimme, gimme filth of the sort that spews out of Rush Limbaugh and Neil Bortz every single day like a fountain of untreated sewage? It just doesn't stop. All right, your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. And starting tomorrow night, we will be carried live. This program will be carried live in Los Angeles on KTLK. We're really looking forward to that, getting back on that radio station, KTLK, in Los Angeles, starting tomorrow night. Just a couple of emails here and then to your phone calls regarding Bortz and the rest of these right-wing thugs. Lynn writes, Mike, I think the problem with these people is they have never visited or lived in another country. They are divorced from nature, divorced from anything else other than money and self-gratification. As Barack and Michelle Obama have said, there is a deficit of empathy in this country. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? This toxic narcissistic attitude that has been fostered since when? I don't know. The Wild West attitude, maybe, but especially under Republican leadership in this country for the past 30 years of one sort or another, it is murderous. It is so divorcing from our people in our neighborhood, people in our communities, from each other, from other nations that we should be working with. We have these enormous problems. So what are we doing? We are invading countries and occupying them. Oh, my God. Donald in Augusta writes, Mike, I voted for Barack Obama today. As a strong Edwards supporter, I had to make a decision, and it came down to this. Obama is not a creature of Washington, so he's probably more prone to be pushed in the right direction. Also, he is much harder to attack for the Republicans. We know they are going to try the race and the Muslim game, but I have a feeling it will backfire this time. Don't get me wrong, both Obama and Clinton are corporatists. However, we know what we'll get with Clinton. Witness her husband's presidency. Obama does scare me a bit, but I think we can put enough pressure on him to move him to a much more progressive agenda. Clinton's war chest predetermines where she will focus her agenda. I do still have a sick feeling in my stomach about this election. I hope with every bit of my being I'm wrong, and we do not allow the Republicans to steal another one. It is all about electability now. And from Kate, who's on the road, this is about the Bortz thing, blaming the survivors. Mike, I too am still hearing and reading that spewing of blaming the victim. Bless his heart, referring to Bortz, he has never suffered devastation personally. When Mother Universe comes to cleanse her planet, he will get his. I wouldn't want to be him. He is to be pitied. If he had to be in the recovery areas, he might get to a place of compassion. They are still saying that folks in New Orleans didn't leave when they had the chance. But Katrina didn't get them. They went to bed thinking all was well. The levees breaking was what caught everyone by surprise, not Katrina. Their rants never talk about the Mississippi Gulf Coast. I wish folks could call in and ask these men if they've been there to see what it's like and to hear the stories from the folks who didn't have the resources to evacuate. Oh, hell, never mind. Kate. Back to your phone calls, shall we? Excuse me. Joe is calling from Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Joe.
Gadzooks, Mike.
Back at you.
How's it going?
It's going.
Oh, I wanted to talk to you about all these candidates that they're up for running. There's really nobody worth voting for, you know? Like, you've got...
No, wait, there's nobody what?
Worth voting for.
Well, that's not true. I just don't think that's true. Why do you say that? That sounds like very cynical. There's nobody worth voting for?
Yeah, well, the only two people that I would have voted for was John Edwards and Ron Paul. And Ron Paul's not going to get elected, and Edwards dropped out.
But so what? If Ron Paul doesn't get elected, or if any candidate doesn't get elected once the voting starts, assuming the voting is legitimate and the votes get counted, if these people don't get elected, it's because people, I'm sorry, Joe, like you, said, well, my vote doesn't count. Why bother?
I never said my vote doesn't count. I just said that I don't think that either Clinton or Obama are going to do a good job because, like you said, they're corporatists. you know?
Okay, well, that may be true. That may very well be true. But why not? Why throw in the towel, Joe, and just say, you know, to hell with it? Look, let me tell you something. Politics, like nature, abhors a vacuum. If you have a vacuum in politics, then in comes people like George Bush or Lee Atwater or Karl Rove, and they're like monsters. Monsters under your bed when you're a 3-year-old kid. If they come out from under the bed, they'll destroy your bedroom, they'll shred your parents, and then they'll rip you into a million pieces. So you don't allow that to happen. Go vote. If you think Ron Paul is the answer, vote for him. Don't say he doesn't have a chance. Vote for him.
I am going to vote for him.
Good. Okay. Well, I got the impression you were just saying to hell with it.
No, I go by, if you don't vote, you don't have, you know, the right to complain about how bad this country sucks.
That's a good point of view. Good point of view.
But, like, I like John Edwards. The only thing I didn't like was, like, I'm more of, like, you have to get out there and work for something. I don't think that, like, things like universal health care should be given to everyone, you know?
Well, then, if it's universal health care, by definition, it's for everyone. That's what the word universal means.
Right. But
okay, well, then you're talking about selective health care. Only certain people should get it.
Right. Like, if you work hard and you put money into it, then you should get something out of it. If you're just, like, you're playing around all day in a house and you don't want to work or anything, you shouldn't have the opportunity to use it, you know?
What if you're in a situation like this? Supposing you're 19 years old and you, for the wrong reasons, you go off to fight in Bush's occupation war in Iraq, and while you're over there, you suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, and you come back, and you got a squirrel cage inside your head, and you can't hold a job, and you're constantly upset and depressed about what you saw and what you did, and now you're 21 years old, and theoretically you've probably got 50, 60 years ahead of you. Are you telling me that guy shouldn't get health insurance because he can't hold a job, because nobody will hire him, because he's a little bit crazy around the edges, or appears to be? Is that what you're saying, Joe?
That's a different thing.
No. Stop. You said someone who's laying around the house not working. Our imaginary soldier can't get a job because nobody will hire him, because he got a discharge, a less than honorable discharge from the United States military because they didn't want to deal with paying him benefits for the damage they did to him. Are you suggesting that that soldier, ex-soldier, should not get health care?
No, if that's a different thing. If there's nothing wrong with you, like, if you don't want to work, I mean, you shouldn't get it. If you serve your country and if you're injured mentally or physically, you should have whatever is wrong with you.
Okay, all right. Let's take a child that's born with Down syndrome and can't get a job because of the prejudice against people with Down syndrome, and that child grows up, and that child is now 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, 24, can't get a job. Now it's a young adult with Down syndrome. Are you saying that that young adult with Down syndrome who can't get a job shouldn't get health insurance?
No, I mean...
Okay, wait. Here's another one. Let's supposing there's a man and a woman, and they're married, and they have three children under the age of 10, and the man gets killed in a car wreck, and the woman can't get a job because she's got to stay home and take care of her children, so she goes on some sort of welfare. Are you saying that woman should not be given health care because she can't work? Okay, Joe, listen, think over what you said to me about only people who work should get health care, and realize how wrong that position is. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate you checking in. Time for a break. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Everyone's stiff.
Mike Malloy Show.
Excuse me.
Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
I thought the microphone was closed. Woo! I'm still fighting Molly's little viral cold here.
You kind of sneeze like Edwards, but your glasses are more like Hillary's.
It's 21 past the hour. I hope I didn't get any of that on anybody. Back to your phone calls. Let's see. Tom is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. Very interesting, a lot of topics. Number one, that last young man that called, just right off the top, he should take a trip outside the U.S. and skin his knee and go to any kind of medical care outside the U.S. And I've lived in Europe a few times, and even Mexico. My mother was in the hospital in Mexico. She had the best care she ever had.
Yeah.
But I'm, but you know, we do live in America, and I agree with you. It's, you know, a lot of times you go, God, you know, what the hell's going on, this and that. And I feel the same way. It's collective insanity, you know. It's just, you know, the whole thing with Hillary from the start changed. And about a week ago, she's on the I saw this little snippet or heard it somewhere on the radio. Help me, help me, help me. And it's like, okay, she's going to lead us? I want somebody who's begging me to help her get her husband back in the White House. And, you know, this whole thing about change. So we have Bush 1, Clinton for 8, Bush for 8, and the American people go, yay, we're going to elect Hillary and get change. It's like, what?
Yeah, well, that part is absolutely
insane.
Yeah, it is. The change, like I think we all know, those of us who still have enough cerebral cortex left to think, the change Hillary's talking about is a gender change in the White House. And a lot of people in this country feel that that is sufficient, that, you know, let's give a woman a chance, which to me is pure sexism. That's the same thing as saying, let's give a black person a chance, pure racism. If Hillary Clinton had the voting record and surrounded herself with advisors that indicated a progressive agenda, I would support Hillary Clinton until the cows came home. It just so happens, in my opinion, just me, only mine, couldn't care from whether it influences anyone else or not. From looking at the record, Barack Obama comes closer. He's not on the progressive agenda target either, not by a damn sight. But because he represents real change, because his policies and his advisor, and not his policies, but his policy advisors and his voting record in the Senate is acceptable, because I live in the United States. Damn it, I can't find someone who's right on every single issue. I can't find a candidate who is going to agree with me on every single issue. And agree with me doesn't mean agree with me. Agree with a progressive agenda. You're not going to find any candidate like, not even a Green Party candidate is going to be absolutely correct on every one of those ideals that most of us who consider ourselves progressives would like to see. So
right, they don't have a chance. Well, Kucinich was as good as I've seen.
He's about as close as they came.
Yeah.
You know, you could even make an argument that Edwards was on,
right,
the,
right,
on the take,
yep,
for certain corporate interests. Well,
right.
Damn it. So that comes down then, doesn't it? It comes down, Tom, to do we just say, well, to hell with it. Since I can't have perfect, I won't go for good.
Well, you know, okay, let me just, on that point, and that's another American thing. I lived in France, Italy, and Germany. I'm an artist for a living. And, you know, in other countries, people see shades of gray. In America, it's this black and white, puritanical, heaven-hell thinking. And it's just, to me, it's such a complex thing. I mean, and what you said, too, and that's the Barack thing. It's like the guy, I remember right before the first Bush primary, or the Democratic thing, I didn't like Gore. He was a people pleaser, and it's like another Clinton. Mm-hmm. And so I was behind Bill Bradley. And I remember I heard an interview, I think it was Bill Moyers, and he said, you know, I really like Bradley, but the American people will never elect anyone smarter than they are. And I'm afraid Barack, this black and female crap, it's stupid. This is to run the world.
Right.
I don't care what clothes they're wearing or.
Right. Well, part of that, of course, is the media. The media love this. They have a woman.
It's freaking insanity.
Yeah, they have a white woman and a black male. And they're just, I mean, they're just dribbling and drooling all over themselves on CNN and MSNBC and ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, all of them. They're just slobbering because they get to point up what any moron knows without having Wolf Blitzer tell us. Oh,
yeah, I know.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I,
there's a white woman and a black man. Oh, well, okay. Now, what are their points of view?
Yeah.
What are their positions? But media will not allow. How many times today, if you listen to any of it, whether it was on radio or television, how many times today did you hear a sentence similar to, he wants to be the first black president,
oh,
she wants to be the first woman?
Crap.
Oh, my God.
You know, Albright, woman. Condi Rice, woman. Margaret Thatcher. She
right.
bombed the crap out of the Balkans and everything else with Reagan. Woman.
I know.
You know, look at all the women in history. Catherine the Great. Woman.
Lizzie Borden.
What's that got to do with anything?
Hey, I got to leave it there. Thanks,
all
Tom.
Right, Mike. Hey,
all
man,
right,
Mike. I love you, brother.
Appreciate
all right.
it. Take care.
All right,
take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
More of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls here. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on the internet. Hey, Matthew.
Good evening.
How are you?
This Super Tuesday, it's kind of reminding me of the Special Olympics. I mean, they all can run, and a couple of them will win, but they're all still retarded.
Oh, Jesus, Matthew.
honestly, I've kind of this after John Edwards dropped out. I'm still undecided. But one thing that's really started to kind of bother me, and actually I've seen it more on our side, especially from the Hillary camp, is it's getting so hard to listen to a lot of these radio shows because I'm hearing a lot of these. People who are agitators. They're not supporters, they're agitators, harassing these people. And I've been harassed personally at these meetings that I go to by people who just personally attack me. And I just really wish that we could put, I almost wish we could put these people in a room and say, okay, listen, you can support your candidate, but leave the rest of us alone. You know, I think that. And what scares me even worse is that my mind, my severely messed up mind, keeps thinking SA, like the stormtroopers or Hitler.
But,
now, I'm not comparing them. I don't want to offend any of the normal Hillary. Oh, my God. But I don't want to offend any normal Hillary support. If you support Hillary and you're nice about it, and you say, you listen, you support your candidate, I support my candidate, and we're cool, then, you know, you have my most undying respect. But for those of you who call up my favorite radio hosts like Stephanie Miller, like occasionally you, Mike, and they just go on this rampage of, well, Obama this, Obama that, but Hillary's so much better.
Right.
I'm just so sick of it, and I want to just grab them and say, shut up! But, you know, that's just me. Anyway, I really would like to get your thoughts on one particular thing. I know you used to be a Edwards supporter, and I know you said at one point And I did kind of agree with this and caused me some care, is that do we support the one who we don't completely agree with but is more electable, or do we let the Republican get into office and in the end we still win because the Republican Party collapses in on itself?
Is there a third choice?
The third choice is move to another country.
No, man. I'll tell you what would be a good third choice would be to have a viable socialist party in this country.
Oh, I agree.
And that would provide a candidate, a socialist candidate, a true socialist candidate, who I could get behind the policies, if it's the old Norman Thomas style socialism, in half a heartbeat. But this is the United States of America. The Republican Party in this country is really the closeted fascist party, and not so closeted anymore. The Democratic Party is the closeted corporate party, and not so closeted anymore. So, yeah, there's a burning need for a third party, and the only party I can think that would really, I mean, there's the Greens, there's the Independents, there's this, there's that, but what we need in this country is a party that is dedicated purely to the concepts of socialism. We are so far beyond the point where capitalism is going to do anything but hasten the end of everything.
Watch out, Mike. You're on Texas radio.
Well, of course I am. But we need a candidate who will present for a choice to the American people the precepts and the concepts and the ideas and the policies of pure socialism, and see how the American people respond.
I totally agree, and I've always said, what we really need to do if we want to get far is we need to, at least for those of us who still consider ourselves Democrats, especially progressive Democrats, we should just either tear down our party and completely rebuild it from the ground up, or true progressives just create our own party and let the Democratic Party become the Democrat Party, let the conservatives have the Democrat Party, and we can form the Democratic Party and become Democrats.
All right, that's a wonderful idea. All right, Matthew, I got to go.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Matthew. Appreciate you checking in. John is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, John.
Yes.
Go ahead, sir. You're on the electric radio. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing? I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
No, I'm a first-time caller. I'm a long-time listener. I love your show. I have two quick points to make. First, I think that it's very important that Obama wins the primary. One, because a lot of people look at the policy on the war, and they tend to look just at how quick the troops are going to be removed from Iraq, but they tend to overlook the fact of diplomacy. And I think electing Obama as president is going to enhance our diplomacy, you know, on a worldwide scale, greatly, especially compared to Bush. But you know, I like his policy on an open dialogue with other countries, and you know, I think that's better for our country right now, especially in the war. And second, I'm a little bit confused with the results from the Arizona early results because, well, first of all, a lot of those were turned away or else were referred to a provisional ballot, even though, you know, like, for example, I moved to Mesa, Arizona, and then I went to vote where it told me to vote at, and then they made me fill out a provisional ballot. Now, I don't know how significant the amount of provisional ballots are in Arizona, but I know for a fact that a lot of the people that I talked to were voting for Obama and had to vote on a provisional ballot. And one quick thing is that what scares me is that a lot of the people that I've talked to said that if Obama wins the Democratic nomination, they'll vote for him. However, if Hillary Clinton wins the Democratic nomination, they're going to vote for McCain or whoever the Republican candidate is. So, I mean, I think that if Obama wins the nomination leading up into November, I think that his message will get out even more, which will further his chances of winning the election, and, which will, ultimately lead to a Democratic White House.
Well, you may be right, and that is one strategy, what you're talking about, a strategy for Democrats or progressives in this country. The other strategy for progressives is just say to hell with it and walk away from the whole thing. And, of course, I don't think that is a proper response to what we're faced with. Thanks, John. Luisa is calling from New Mexico, listening on the Internet. Hey, Luisa.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I've never listened to your program before.
Until tonight?
Yeah, it's been recommended. Well, I went to vote in my Super Tuesday to vote against my family's quote-unquote God to get out of my politics. They are what I've termed the acronym ARS, the Religious Self-Righteous Right.
Yeah, okay. Now, who is your family's God?
The religious right.
Oh, I see. So you went to vote. You went to vote today
against my family's religion. They do not think anything other than black and white, either or, yes or no.
Uh-huh.
There is no gray area. You cannot even reason with these people. I've had a root canal today that was abscessed, and I am really, really stressed out.
Yeah, well, I would think so. What would possess you to call a radio program when you feel,
Well, because I've listened to Air America. I've called into Jeff Farias a few times, and I go on to SoldierVoices.net a number of times. But I believe that what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that you do, it's going to come around and either bless you or bite you in the ass. I had a conversation with one of my family members about my father being put in a psych unit, and they said, oh, the Lord has followed all the steps, and this is the right thing to do. And I said, well, I don't agree. I should just go home. What about my God?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not even reasonable people.
There's a lot of people who are stuck with that kind of a situation, Luisa. Listen, thank you for calling. I got a break here. I hope you call again. As far as what goes around comes around, that's a perfectly explainable rule. Is it Newton's first or second law of motion, Kathy? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I think it's the first law, isn't it? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. About 10 before the hour. Do you feel a little wrung out? Thanks to the crew tonight for making this program happen once again. Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls. Our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Our podcast manager, Ben Birch. Our technical director, Billy Foster. Our resident philosopher, Bob Alexander, and we have got to come up with a title for Bridget at fairywoodland.com. She sends me really good emails. Our gateway to, What can Bridget be?
Well, see, if you say our gateway to fairyland, people are going to think you're talking about San Francisco.
No, I'm not. No, not fairyland. To peace. To our gateway to mother.
Serenity now.
No,
serenity now.
No, Bridget's not that way. Bridget's an ass kicker. She's a fighter, but she also she kind of opens the door a crack to. Whenever I get emails from Bridget, no matter how pissed off they are, and they're usually pissed off, I think I've just gotten a little peek of forests and verdant fields and white fluffy clouds and a blue sky and somewhere off in the distance harp and flute music. I'm sorry, and then I read her email and she's just storming Norman, you know, just kicking ass and taking names. So I don't know. We got to come up with a title for Bridget.
Well, there are certainly pissed off fairies. I've met a few of them in the salon. But let me ask you a question. I'll tell you what I have found annoying more than anything else about this coverage tonight on the major news networks. It's not so much about how they keep talking about the white candidate and the black candidate in the Democratic race.
You mean the woman candidate.
I'm sorry. Right. The woman. Oh, yeah. Well, the white woman and the black guy.
Right.
It's how they are pitting this Hispanic versus African-American voting base against
each other.
They want to make it sound like it's the Jets and the Sharks, and you know, I mean, they're going to get out there with knives in the street and start, you know, the Crips and the Bloods and wearing their colors.
I know.
That's crazy. And then the other thing, I watched them break down. I think it was the state of Missouri. I've had this muted down county by county. And talk about, well, here's where the blacks are here and the women are voting over there. First off, does most of America really care about the demographic breakdown?
That's what isolates us and categorizes us and puts us into little cells. And media are so responsible for doing this. The dirty bastards, they just irritate the hell out of me.
Yeah, and not only is it divisive and derivative, but it's also very
fake.
Well, and it's so minutia oriented. I mean, it's just so focused on the minutia.
But
it's also
highly manipulative. It is what television does and does so well to isolate us, to separate us, to divide us. The television is not a medium that brings people together. The only time television brings people together is when they're watching the Super Bowl or some teleplay like Sopranos. But where it concerns critical, vital issues, television has never brought us together. It always divides us. It always tries its damnedest to separate. And I think you're pointing out, I haven't been watching it, obviously. I mean, I've been watching it, but you've got the sound on out there in your part of the studio. I'm sure that's what they're doing.
Well, speaking of television, now you're making me rethink the whole PBS thing. Do you think Sesame Street's still okay for Molly and Between the Lions?
Yeah, it is.
Are we going to start a race war?
No, it's okay. It's okay. Rex is calling from Utah. He's trucking in Utah, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Rex.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. A little cold out here, but other than that, I'm getting by.
Good.
Got a question for you. I was listening to that Mark Thompson show tonight, and I think it was like 5 hours long. I got to tell you, you know what? This whole thing is just, it's sickening to me because I listen to a lot of those callers calling in, and what they voted on is charismatic, you know.
Yeah.
What kind of, I mean, what's this country coming to when it comes to that? But, you know.
Well, we have become a society that is more interested in the entertainment value of any subject at all. Show me the entertainment value. Right, I'll tell you what. Here in Atlanta, right after Network News, they have Entertainment Tonight, and I usually have it on here in the studio when I'm finishing up. Last minute touches on the program, and I'll be listening to ABC News, and then the ABC affiliate here, after Charlie Gibson is off, they carry Entertainment Tonight. Tonight, when it started, the whole first 5 or 6 or 7 minutes was about Hillary Clinton and Obama, Barack Obama, from a standpoint of their star power, And I'm thinking to myself, you know, you sons of bitches, that's exactly what Entertainment Tonight does. That's what ABC, CBS, NBC, and the rest of them do. It's just that Entertainment Tonight is the only one that is blatant about it. The rest of them, it's the same damn game. Their charisma, their attractiveness, how tall are they? Is their hair done right? Are they the first African American? Are they the first female American? Are they the first? Jesus, God, I get tired of it.
I've heard girls say he inspires me, and then I've heard the guy would ask him, well, what do you mean by inspires you? Explain inspire. Oh, I don't know. He just pulls me in. What are you talking?
Right. It's a sex thing.
Is that going to drop my $2,500 fuel bill a week on this truck?
I hear you. I hear you, Rex. Hey, listen, I got to leave it there, pal. Thank you, Rex. I appreciate you checking in. Your call's breaking up a little bit, and we got to bail out anyway. But yeah, sex appeal. Show me a sexy looking candidate like John Edwards, and so many people who look at, I don't care if they're male or female, because we're all attracted by attractive people. It doesn't make any difference what their message is. We'll listen to them. Yeah, quickly.
Well, then, how do you explain Lumpy McCain?
We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care.
The unseparated twin that he has growing out of his jaw.
Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.